Good morning, 4th Avenue family. I am honored and humbled to be here with you today. Woo! Hey! Got something working for me already. I'm going to start us off with a prayer, if you don't mind a bow with me. Father, thank you so much for this church family. Thank you for the shepherds here and the families here, Father, and your love. God, I just pray this morning boldly in the name of your son, Jesus, that this is yours, that all of this is yours, that the words are spoken are yours, and that the words are received are yours. If anything is not, I just pray that it is going to flee from this room. And we want to bind the enemy away from this place, God. And let this morning be a time, whether in our worship, in our conversations, in our listening, and in our speaking, God, let it all be yours. Let us grow closer to one another as we chase after you. In the name of your son, Jesus, we all say together, amen. We have been walking through a series of the names of Jesus. Patrick last week took us to the Good Shepherd. He talked about the rock a couple of weeks ago. He's talked about Jesus being our desire. And last week he took us into John 10. And we went through the beginning of John 10 and talked about how Jesus is our good shepherd. And today we're going to be in John 10 as well, a little bit further down. We're going to start off in verse 22. If you have your Bibles or your apps, whatever it may be, John 10, verse 22. We're just going to take it a verse at a time. Then came the feast of dedication at Jerusalem. It was winter, and Jesus was in the temple area walking in Solomon's colonnade. The Jews gathered around him saying, "How long will you keep us in suspense? If you are the Christ, tell us plainly." And Jesus answered, I did tell you, but you do not believe. The miracles I do in my Father's name speak for me. We'll hold up right there. Verse 22, it says the feast of dedication. It says this in winter. This is referring to Hanukkah, so a lot of words for what we would recognize is Hanukkah. And then it goes on and it says, in Solomon's colonnade. In your scripture, it might say Solomon's porch. It could be either one of those, Solomon's colonnade or Solomon's porch. In Acts, later on, we see the apostles here. This is a normal place for people to be gathering and asking Jesus questions. This makes sense in this setting for sure. And they say, all right, it's time for you to tell us. Just tell us straight up. You the Messiah or you're not? Like, we just need you to tell us, be up front with us. And he says, I did. My miracles that I did speak plainly in my Father's name. This is real, this is me moment. The other night, on Wednesday nights in the youth room, after a devotional and after some worship, we celebrate, whether that be a game or singing and dancing and lip singing, karaoke. It's a really fun time. The other night we played a Demi Lovato song and it said, all the chorus is, "This is real, this is me." And we were all excited about it and jamming out. It was a fun time. And this is the moment where Jesus is saying, this is it. I'm gonna let it speak plainly. This is me, this is real. He doesn't go into definition of everything. As believers, we have opportunities where we're planting seed. And we don't sit around the seed and say, oh, you know, okay, y'all go into dinner. I'm just going to sit here and water and watch it grow and just sit around it. And, oh, passersby, hey, my plant's growing over here. I'm good. Just go along. When you plant the seed, the responsibility is then transferred to the ground. You can't just sit there with it the whole entire time. There's moments where we have to say, okay, I've planted that seed. And Jesus is saying, my miracles, they spoke plainly. There's moments of frustration in that for sure. Moments where we can think, oh man, I need to be in charge of this. I need to take ownership over this. But this is a shaking the dust off his feet moment, right? When we take the time to acknowledge that truly every good and perfect gift does in fact come from above. We can't help but allow the good that we do to be in our Father's name. And he refers to his Father's name here. But we have nothing to prove. Right? The good is from the Father. Once we start to give credit for the good things that we are doing through him in our lives, we can start to see more and more of the good that he is doing through others. Recently, I was on a trip with my friend Rachel in the Pacific Northwest, and we were in Washington, and we stumbled across this farmer's market in Olympia, Washington. It was very, very random. And I realized all over the West, there's so many people that recycle. It's not that it's not popular here, but it's very, very popular there. And you could say it's a hippie culture or whatever it may be. But there's a lot of people that care about the environment there. And at this farmer's market, there were a ton of recycling bins lining every single area. And I leaned over to her and I said, "It's crazy because recycling isn't something that a lot of people get paid to do, right? If any of you get paid to recycle, let me know. But most people don't get paid to recycle. It's just something that people do out of the goodness of their heart or that they love the earth. And so it's kind because it's these people are being servant-hearted. But Washington isn't the middle of the Bible Belt. There's not a church on every corner. And so most likely, a lot of these people that were recycling don't even know that they're doing the Lord's work. They're being servant-hearted, and there's good in them, but they're not doing it to glorify the Lord's name. It's so fun to know that even as believers, when we see people that might not claim the good as the Lord, that we can still see the Lord shining through others. It's speaking plainly through their actions. And what a moment that we have to be able to point those things out and say, wow, in the middle of Washington, I'm seeing so much of the Lord's work and servants around me, even though they might not be claiming it as his. This reminds me of Paul in Acts 17. He comes to the church of Athens, and there's a lot going on, and there's people worshiping, and there's idols, and there's even an idol that says to an unknown God. And Paul says, "Now what you worship is something unknown. I'm going to proclaim it to you as known." We get the chance to say, hey, person that's recycling, guess what? Like, you're doing the Lord's work. That's so fun. We get to let them know and shine the light on what is the good that is living inside of them, because we know that that good is from above. We're going to go back into verse 25. Jesus answered, "I did tell you, but you did not believe. The miracles I do in my Father's name speak for me, but you do not believe because you are not my sheep." Jesus right here could have easily gone along the route of, oh, you're asking me if I'm the Messiah? Okay, all right. Were you at the wedding? Water to wine, did that. All right, let's see, walking on water? Yep, did that too. How about that time? Basket, fish, bread, fed 5,000, what up? Wait for the grand finale. I'm about to die on a cross, veil rips, go in the tomb, roll it away, resurrection, I'm the Messiah. He could have easily gone down that route, right? But he didn't. He just says, the miracles I did speak plainly. They speak plainly. There's so much good that I know a lot of you are doing. And when we get to credit the good that we're doing completely to the Lord, it's so much easier to see the good that other people are doing for the Lord. But when we like the work that we're doing too much, when we think the work we're doing is our good, claiming those miracles as our own, or that prayer as our own, or the healing, or whatever it may be, those good things, when we start to claim those as our own and we like the things we do too much, it's really hard to like things that other people do when it's different from us. Because when we like ourselves too much, how do we like something that's different? But when we speak plainly saying it is the Lord's, it's so much easier to see that good in others. I came across a quote recently that says, there's no respect for others without humility in oneself. It's that moment of recognizing the Lord did that. Therefore, I'm able to respect you for what the Lord's doing in your life, even if it looks completely different than what he's doing in mine. And C.S. Lewis has already quoted this morning, but here's another one. Humility is not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less. There are moments when the Lord is doing good in us and we're saying, no, it's not. But that's not giving God enough credit, right? It's not about thinking less of yourself and saying that you're not doing anything, because that's still not giving credit to the Lord. There's a balance there of not claiming it as our own, but still claiming it as the Lord's. Because if we're sitting around saying that we're not capable of doing anything for the kingdom, how can we give him the credit and the glory and the honor and the power? There's a too high and a too low moment of humility that is a tough thing to balance. But Jesus right here exemplifies that in a beautiful, beautiful light. We're going to move on to verse 27. My sheep listen to my voice. I know them and they follow me. I give them eternal life and they shall never perish. No one can snatch them out of my hand. My Father who has given them to me is greater than all. No one can snatch them out of my Father's hand. I and the Father are one. Verse 27, my sheep listen to my voice. You guys don't have CDs, that's okay. But for this side of the room, y'all had CDs before. And I did too, I'm with you guys on that, it's fun. But there's moments in a car, if you had a CD, maybe specifically when you were 16 or 17, and you put in the CD, and you know, like, song number two just ended, and you know exactly what song number three is going to be. You know the first three beats, and you know what's coming, right? Have we had those moments? Okay, so the way that the students would relate to this at church camp, we have a lip sync competition. It started out because me and Marianne needed to fill a night when it was raining last year at church camp. Okay, so then it became a big deal. Fair warning, winner is a big deal. Runner-up is a big deal. Be careful who you let win and who doesn't win, all right? Just throw it out there, big competition, big deal. So this is the winning group from this year. This is our 7th and 8th grade girls. They're adorable. If you haven't met them, you should. They're awesome. So they won this year. But what's crazy about this lip sync competition is that these students know the words. They know the voice of this artist, so much so that it's not just knowing what verse is next or what words are next. I'm telling you, they know the moves that the artist does in their music video. They know the note change or the key change. They know the drum behind the words to be able to imitate the instruments. It is insane how much they know these artists and they know their voice. It's really hard to judge, so we're looking for judges next year. I'm not gonna do that again. If you wanna do that, see me after. But they're really good at this. They know the voice. They know even how the artists will change when they change in the song. If they do a really high note, they'll raise up their heads because they know the high note is coming. It's impressive. Jesus right here is saying, my sheep know my voice. And that knowing his voice doesn't just mean as a sheep following, it means imitation, right? It's this lip sync version of a sheep to Jesus. They know my voice. And then verse 29, no one can snatch them. Jesus is giving us belonging here. We have a sense of it and a desire to belong, whether that be in your schools or in your homes, in your workplace, at church, in your life group. We have a desire to belong. And Jesus is saying, you're mine. No one can snatch them. And he goes past it and says, I and the Father are one. He's saying, I have a sense of belonging too. I belong to him. And your desire to belong, it's not wrong. I and the Father are one, and you are my sheep. You know my voice. You sing that song. You've memorized those words. You do those moves. I and the Father are one. Therefore, you're following the Father when you're following the good shepherd because they are one. That sense of belonging is spoken to here, even in the midst of darkness. Last week, Patrick referenced a sheep pen that is not, he said it is exposed. It is not covered. And so what he was talking about here, here's a picture of what he's talking about. I guess it's here. I don't need to point back there. Hey, right here. There's not a covering to this pen, right? And the good shepherd sits and sleeps even at the front of this gate, but it is exposed, open to elements, rain, sleet. I don't know if it's like in Africa, like a gazelle could come over. I mean, there's a lot of things that could happen here. It's exposed. There's moments of darkness. And even though you're in the pen with the good shepherd, there's brokenness. The rain can still come in, and the hail can still come in. The doubt can come in. Sin can creep in. A lot of things can come in, but that doesn't mean that we lose our hope in the one good shepherd. Hope is a word that has taken on a lot of meaning in my life. I used to speak that word and not really knew what it meant. And I've tried to be intentional about making sure I know definitions, even of simple words that I've heard my whole life. Looking up the definition of hope is cool because it's twofold. It's an expectation and a desire. When we say we put our hope in the Lord, yes, we desire that good shepherd at the front of the pen, but we are expectant that he will be there. In the midst of the exposed pen, we're expectant that our good shepherd is there. Again, on that trip that I referenced earlier in Washington, we started out in California, my friend Rachel and I, and this is in Southern California. We had, the day before, we had hiked one of the hardest hikes we had both ever done, and it was a lot of miles, and we were tired, and so on this day, we got to Lassen Volcanic National Park, and we said, we're just going to relax, which is a big deal for Shanna, and so we go on trail, not too far, and we put up our hammocks, and we were just going to sit. And we were excited about it. So we find some good trees, we put up our hammocks, and my hammock is above hers, and we ended up sitting in silence for hour and a half. This beautiful lake, this gorgeous mountain, and there were these birds. I'm not a huge bird fan. This comes from a lot of things. My sister doesn't like birds, and I try to be like her. Also, the movie Birds, never see it. It's awful. Mike Webb made me touch a bird in Nicaragua, and it like almost killed Hannah Anderson right before he made me touch it. So it's just not a huge bird fan. But there were these birds on this lake that were beautiful, and I liked them, which was a big deal. They were, dozens and dozens of them were dipping down near the water, and they weren't trying to kill us or anything, so that was fun. And these birds were completely white on their bellies and underneath their wings, but on the back of them was black, and on the tops of their wings was black. And so when they were above you, it looked like completely white birds, but then when they would dip down, you would see the black on their back. And I was watching them for a while and reading and thinking and praying. And my friend Rachel, in the sweetest voice, says, Lauren, do you see those birds? And I was like, yeah. And she said, their bellies are overwhelmingly white. And I was like, yeah, they are really white. What Rachel didn't know was that I was in Matthew reading a parable that I haven't read often at all. And we talk about the parable of the seed. We talk about the parable of the sower a lot. But we don't talk about the parable of the weed very often. And I was in Matthew reading the parable of the weed, and it was so interesting how the Lord connected that with these birds that were above us. To tell you about the parable of the weed, essentially what happens is the harvester goes and plants a wheat grain, and then the enemy comes in at night and plants weeds all around the wheat grain. And the harvester's servants come and they say, what in the world? There's weed around the wheat grain. And the harvester says, the enemy did this. Which in parables of Jesus, to mention the enemy, this is already a big moment. He says, the enemy did this. And the servants asked him, okay, well, do you want us to go? We can go pull him up really quick. Like, we got this. We got you. We'll pull him up. And he says, no. Because when you're pulling up the weed, you might uproot the wheat with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. At that time, I will tell the harvesters, first collect the weeds, and then in bundles to be burned. Then gather the wheat and bring it to my barn. Really interesting parable. The harvester doesn't want to get rid of all the weed. Because he knows that if you take away all the grossness, then some of the good that has been rooted in the midst of that grossness could be taken up too. And what's crazy is that we get so frustrated. I'm totally in this boat of getting really frustrated with all of the weeds that are growing around us. But here the harvester says, let them both grow. This darkness, whether it be planted by the enemy, planted by other people, maybe planted by yourself, there's darkness around us. And he says, no, if you take all of that up, if you get rid of all of that, then you're not gonna be able to be as deeply rooted as you are. These birds that were so beautiful, the white, the overwhelmingly white bellies that I loved, I thought, man, I wish the whole bird was white. But the reality is, if you took out the black part of that bird, you'd take out the whole bird. For that bird to be as beautiful as it is, you needed both sides of it. There's moments where we're entrapped. The elements are coming in off of that, off of in our pen, off of the sky or off of the land, whatever it may be. And we have the opportunity to accept the goodness that is God's grace. That doesn't leave room for excuses. And that doesn't mean that we get to say, let it rain, let it pour. Like, we're just gonna envelop ourselves and all of the weed around us because there's grace in this. No. But we have been given the opportunity to see moments, beautiful moments, where we get to see the white, or we get to see the wheat grain all around us growing. And even in the midst of the weed, we can hear that voice underneath us saying, the overwhelmingly white. Right? Like, you and I also get to be that voice underneath saying, look at how tall the wheat grain is growing. And even though the weeds might be encompassing, and you might be sitting in a moment right now where all you can see is the weeds, or all you can feel is that gate being opened and the elements coming down, but we have been introduced to the good shepherd at the gate. We have been introduced to the deeply rooted wheat grain where we are able to say his grace is amazing and it does reach us. And when we've gotten to experience that overwhelmingly white, the green of the weed around us shows us that his grace is so much greener than that. It covers all of that. And now we get to go and share that grace with others, not just with the people in this room. We get to go and offer that grace to other people outside of these doors. Whether that be in a service with other churches here that we're doing in a couple of weeks, or with people in your workplace, people in your home, in the moments where their weed is around them and all they can see is weed, you get to be the voice in the hammock underneath saying, look at all the white. The grace is so good and it is amazing and it does reach you, as we sang earlier. And as we stand here in a moment, we're gonna sing the words that it is enough, because we are his children and he does remember us, and he is the good shepherd. And his grace is more than enough.